seriously popular.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, this is your It's All Kicking Off Weekend preview show, and I am happy to report that I am not alone. Chris is here, but that is not what I mean. Horses and ponies, ponies and horses. That was a bit of a theme on Monday when I admitted that I've spent 53 and a half years believing that one grew into the other. Namely, that ponies are baby horses. I now know this to be an untruth. However, after Monday's mocking, I have some allies. Stu9903 on Spotify says, a pony becomes a horse like a lamb becomes a sheep. No.
Dear me.
Our own sports news correspondent, Mike Keegan, says, 1,000,000% thought a pony was a baby horse. While my old friend from ESPN, Mark Ogden, messaged me to say, if a pony isn't a horse, then what is a donkey? Meanwhile, Pablo210 on Spotify, hilarious. Ian thinking a pony was a baby horse has made my day. Now look, when we started this podcast back in August, I think where we are now is where we really hoped we would get to. A bit of football, a bit of real life, and a bit of nonsense. I think we have finally got there.
I don't know, but I wouldn't be boasting about that.
I'm not the only one. That's all I need to say. I'm not the only one. There are other people out there like
me. Keegan. You know, what does that say about Mike? No surprise there. And Oggy as well. Mark Ogden, who I know.
What about Stu on Spotify? Well, that's a pony becomes a horse like a lamb becomes a sheep.
So it says more about Stu, doesn't it, really? Dear me.
Well, there we go. Stu, thanks for listening. Tell all your friends. Right, let's talk about football. I've been in Copenhagen, watching Manchester City this week, and I can confirm they are still a very, very good football team. But ahead of their game at home to Chelsea this weekend, Chris, I actually want to mention something to you that I found really interesting about the game in Denmark. So City were all over Copenhagen. They were, you know, endless possession, spent all the time in the Copenhagen half, creating chances. With half an hour to go, City were leading 2-1 at that point. Erling Haaland had touched the ball 6 times. And by full time, by the time we got to 90 minutes, he touched the ball 14 times. That's not a criticism, by the way, because the bloke scores goals like they're going out of fashion. But that's amazing, isn't it? In a team that has so much possession as Manchester City, for their star striker to be so uninvolved, apart from when he scores, is a bit confusing to me.
I know what you mean. It isn't though, because teams who defend deep and they're trying to stop the ball actually going to Haaland because he is so prolific, and teams who defend deep, you know, with plenty of bodies, they surround him, and Manchester City, they move the ball, they're looking for an opening and a gap. And then, you know, he comes alive. But this isn't a new thing with Haaland. I think if I remember right, he was at Bournemouth last season at the Etihad. He had maybe something ridiculous. I may be miles out, but a really low number of touches, something like 9 touches or something stupid anyway. So, you know, it does happen. But the fact of the matter is when he gets the service, he's so reliable. I don't think that's anything which is going to worry Pep too much.
Oh, no. I mean, look, what was really interesting was that, like I said, it was at 90 minutes when he'd had 14 touches. And then twice in the 3 minutes of added time, he had chances. He went through on goal, keeper saved. And then he had a header at the far post, keeper saved. So all of a sudden he came alive. And then on the back of that, City came again and Foden got the third goal, which will probably be the clinching game of the tie. So, and like I said, it's not a criticism. It's just interesting. And how would you have coped if you were in that position? Would you have kind of got frustrated by having so little of the ball as a number 9?
It's an interesting question. I don't think you can necessarily compare that. I think the position Haaland plays in is a centre forward. I was a centre forward, but there will be rules in the way that he is told that he needs to play, and that's to occupy the centre backs as high as possible. I used to predominantly play in a 4-4-2, so would play with another striker, and I would be the one in the main who would drop and try and link the play and be the focal point. I don't think Haaland, I think he can do it, but I think he's told not to do it, if that's possible, at Manchester City, because they want to free up De Bruyne or Silva or Foden. Half turn, he's on the move and to find him. So that's, you know, slightly different, his role.
It's interesting you say that. I was talking to a couple of journalists at the airport when we were coming home. And as a journalist, even though I've been doing this a long time, I'm always very aware that we are journalists. We are just normal people who are lucky enough to watch football for a living. We haven't played to a higher level. We're not tacticians. So we do always have to kind of understand that our level of understanding of football is nowhere near the people who've played the game and who coach. But even we were saying that you can imagine Haaland coming deep to look for a ball and all of a sudden, you know, coming deep and finding that De Bruyne is there and Bernardo Silva's there and Foden's already there and even John Stones is already there.
Pep doesn't want him in that position. He wants him high up, and then as soon as Foden's in a pocket of space or on the half turn, that's when Haaland comes alive, and he makes so many runs, doesn't he, and so many movements, and a lot of the time he doesn't see the ball, but he keeps making, he's willing, he keeps making those movements, making those runs, and eventually it does come, and that's when it's his lethal best.
Yeah, without diving any deeper into it, I did also wonder how, if that, remember that summer when they were trying to buy Harry Kane, or they wanted to buy Harry Kane. So if Harry Kane had come to City, you wonder how he would have got on there, because obviously part of Kane's game, or certainly at Tottenham, he was always coming deep to get the ball. Does it for England all
the
time.
That's interesting, that. But I mean, as we've seen with Pep's teams over the years, he adapts, doesn't he? Pep, so he would have found a way of getting the best out of Harry Kane. He won a Premier League title, for heaven's sake, with that recognised centre forward. So, you know, on the basis of how would Kane have fitted in, Pep would have found a way of playing to his strengths.
I think Kane would have had to have adapted, don't you think? I think probably Kane, but like Aguero had to adapt when. Anyway, we're going down a rabbit hole and we haven't got time for it on this show. But it's interesting. Interesting thought. Now, one player who has adapted since he's been at City is Jack Grealish. I'm a fan of Jack. You're a fan of Jack. Great season last year with City as they won the treble. Pretty much finished the season as one of their main men. Hasn't gone for him this season. Been out of the team. He got a start against Copenhagen on Tuesday night and came off with an injury after about 20 minutes. And I have to say, mate, he went down under a challenge, but it was apparent straight away that it was a muscle injury. You could actually see the devastation on Grealish's face before he'd even hit the deck, because he knew that he'd pulled something. And I felt desperately sorry for the lad. He is one player at that club who's having no luck this season. And I begin to wonder now how he's going to cope between now and the end of the season, because what will also be in his mind is his England place ahead of the European Championships.
Do you think his England place is in jeopardy? I don't see it
it would be a big surprise, Chris, but there are other candidates: James Madison, Cole Palmer, as long as the, as
we
well
know
as the
Gareth
ones that we
Loyal
know,
like we know we Gareth
I'm not I think I'm talking about the team rather than the squad. I would imagine he'd be in the squad. Anyway, it'll all be on his mind. That's what I'm saying. Now, just give me a bit of an insight from a player's point of view about what it's like when you've got a season, when you're in and out, whether it's because you're not being picked or because you're injured. You know, what it's like mentally when the team's flying or the team's playing and you're just not involved.
I had a few times in my career where I had longer spells out where you're trying to recover from an injury, and you always feel you're playing catch up in that respect. You sort of want it to be, have you heard of the hedonic treadmill?
No.
No, but it's, you sort of want it to be eat, sleep, work, repeat. You want to get into a rhythm where it's the same process every day. And of course, when you have injuries, it becomes a problem. You know, you stop, you're always striving to get back to that highest possible level of fitness, and you're trying to get back into the team as quickly as possible. But when you keep then lapsing, as has done to Grealish this season, it becomes a problem. And it's very individual, but I always found it affected my confidence. Fitness was the biggest or the most important thing to my game. And you can turn around and say, well, you weren't the quickest player, you weren't the strongest player. I would accept all that. But when I was 100% fit, I had total confidence in my game. I knew that I would have bad moments and bad games, but in general, mentally, I felt really strong. And I think when I had injury issues, you know, there's always that little bit of doubt mentally, that little bit of uncertainty. You know, will your hamstring go again, or whatever injury you're coming back from? There's always that danger of that. So, and that seems to be where Jack is at this moment in time. There's no real flow. There's no rhythm, and it's difficult for him at Manchester City because they are the best team in the land. They're the best team in the world, and also he's got Jeremy Doku, hasn't he? Who's a direct rival, and he's not helping Jack Grealish, whether you like it or not, because he's probably the number one there on that left-hand side for Manchester City. And at this moment in time, Jack is going to have to sit and wait and recover and be ready when he does get the opportunity. I know they are different players, but Jack will be desperate to get back as quickly as possible from any injury which he has. But then you need time to bed yourself in and to get to the level again, and that's been his issue this season, really.
And how does it feel when you are injured and you're and as the players go out to train on a Tuesday morning, you are either on the treatment table, or if you're a little bit further along, on the treadmill or the exercise bike or something, or heading to the pool? How does that feel?
Well, I mean, it's not ideal. I mean, you know, everybody wants to train, to play, and to be part of the first team, and that's it. And when you're injured, you feel like you're on the outside. And I mean, you have to play regularly to feel as if you're part of, you know, of the team. It's like
part of the club.
It's like when. You know, when Manchester United won the Champions League in 99 and David May is, you know, celebrating wildly. This isn't knocking David May at all. Mm. But, you know, he was a player on the periphery. I always, you know, talked about when Chelsea won the FA Cup and I was left out of the squad for the final, but I didn't feel part of it. I've never really understood players who don't play in the nicest possible way, because I know you are all part of it, but, you know, never been one for wildly celebrating when you actually don't play a part as such.
But this goes back to perception. And we talked about this earlier in the season when there was that issue of Aaron Ramsdale wildly celebrating a David Raya save from the substitutes bench.
And a few people were saying,
the point people were saying, oh, look, he's kind of doing that on purpose for the cameras. But you made the point that in that situation, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Because if you don't, then you look like a sourpuss. I think it's the same as celebrating with your team, isn't it? If you don't do it, you look like you're sulking. Before we move on, clubs these days, when they redesign their training grounds or build new training grounds, that the modern practice is to put the first team gym in a place where it looks out onto the training pitches. The theory being that if you're a player who's injured and you're on the treadmill or you're on the exercise bike, being able to look out the window and see what you're missing, i.e. watching your teammates train, will make you extra motivated to get back. I mean, I just think that's almost like torture. I mean,
I quite like that. It's a tease, isn't it?
It's like torture. I mean, surely an average footballer is motivated enough to come back without having to be put through the daily torture of seeing what is missing. I mean, it's like seeing your missus walk down the street holding hands with another bloke, surely.
Is there something you want to tell us?
Nothing that's ever happened to me, obviously. But you know what I mean, though? You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like...
It depends which way you want to look at it. I quite like that. You know, look, you get some players who are malingerers, who, you know, aren't bothered whether they play or not. But I think most people, it's an incentive. It's enticing you to get out there as soon as possible and to work harder. That's great knowledge from you.
I don't, anyway, look, going back to great knowledge. So just remind me, the hedonic treadmill? Hedonic treadmill?
I might be wrong with it. I think it's called the hedonic treadmill.
And what was it? And it was what? Work? What does it say again? It was work.
Eat, sleep, work, repeat. So you get in a rhythm.
I think my hedonic treadmill is eat, eat, eat and sleep.
No, but you repeat it. Let's put that out to the listeners. You can make your own hedonic treadmills up. Well, you know, whatever suits you. That's just a basic form.
Hold that thought. We'll be back right after this.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now, City could be 5 points behind by the time they play on Saturday evening, because Brentford play Liverpool in the 12:30 game Saturday lunchtime. Now, that's at Brentford. Now, Liverpool have got the next three games in the league are Brentford, Luton, Forest. And that to me feels like they're going to have to win those three, simply because after that little run comes their crunch game with Man City at Anfield and then the Merseyside derby away at Goodison Park. They need to be, they can't afford any separation between themselves and City.
We all know, right, that Liverpool have to be ruthless. That goes without saying. Nobody I've met in the last week or two has changed the mind about Manchester City, because you just feel it, and you look at their bench every week and the ability to change things. We shouldn't be judging Liverpool just based on that one Arsenal game. They actually recovered okay against Burnley. Saw the pictures of Mo Salah back on the back in full training. I mean, that's absolutely enormous. So they've got a lot to look forward to. The teams they've got, you know, coming up. You mentioned, you know, Brentford, who they've conceded a few goals against in, you know, in recent times. But they have to be. Jurgen Klopp knows they have to be absolutely ruthless. But I wouldn't be ruling Liverpool out because of their firepower.
No.
And you weren't, in fairness.
What I'm saying is, I just think that we're in this typical Man City cycle again. City are the best team, right? In my opinion, City are the best team, right? But that doesn't mean they win the league because good teams can have bad runs. But I see them; they're 11 unbeaten now. If you about 11 wins on the spin, if you go all the way back to the start of the World Club Cup, they're 11 wins on, and this is what they do. And I can just imagine if Liverpool aren't careful, they're going to get to the end of May when the season ends, and they're going to look back and they'll have lost like 3 games all season, but somehow haven't won the league.
They've seen this movie before, haven't they?
And all that, exactly it, mate. That's what I'm saying. And they are in this dreadfully difficult position of knowing that they've pretty much got to win everything. And they've certainly got to win that game against Manchester City at Anfield next month. And it'll be ideal for them to get there still with this 2-point cushion. That's what I'm trying to get at, I think.
Well, we got there in the end.
They've got 3 games. Well, that's how I started. Brentford, Luton, Forest. They've got to win those 3 games. The third day I'm going to cover, Sunday afternoon, Luton at home to Manchester United. Now, Mail Online ran a piece early this week headlined, How Erik Ten Hag Turned United's Season Around. Are we a bit early for that? I was at Villa Park on Sunday. Brilliant game. United could easily have lost that game 4-2.
Yeah. And you know, one of my favourite phrases is, getting the bunting out. I wouldn't be getting the bunting out at Manchester United just yet. I think they've gone early. Yeah, and for the reasons which you've said, and, you know, you look at the teams they've, you know, they've beaten Newport County in that particular run. Wolves, you know, pretty decent.
West Ham,
West Ham, where, you know, apparently the wheels have come off and David Moyes is the worst manager in the world all of a sudden. So, you know, in that respect, I think that it does seem that they've turned a little bit of a corner, and there were a lot of things to like about Manchester United's display at Aston Villa. But you've nailed it. The flip side of that is Aston Villa did not deserve to lose that game. And on another, any given day, you know, they could have lost that game. And Anna played well. They are not out of the woods yet.
The three things that I liked about that Manchester United performance, particularly, and you've mentioned one of them, Scott McTominay, obviously, amazing winning goal. I mean, that bloke just keeps coming, bouncing back and doing good things for a manager who wanted to sell him last summer. But also Andre Onana in the United goal, who I read some criticism of his distribution on Sunday and of the way he was organised his back four. I think that's above my level of understanding when it comes to goalkeepers. All I could see was a bloke who kept making brilliant saves, which is what he's paid to do. And also Harry Maguire. I mean, English football's renaissance man.
Yeah.
I mean, what? That's, I don't know. If I ever needed a heart transplant, I think I'd want Harry Maguire's, because that bloke, what he's been through football-wise and the way he's come back to the level that he's come back at, deserves all the praise in the world. But those two at the back, Maguire and Onana, I thought really, really got United through. And if they are to surprise the world and finish in the top four this season, then they're going to need a bit more of that.
Yeah, I think the point you make about Harry Maguire absolutely nailed it. I can't remember a player who's taken as much of a kicking and he just keeps getting up. When he gets the opportunity into the team, he's so, so reliable. And, you know, I think everybody thought his days were numbered at Manchester United. I did. And yet he keeps proving people wrong time and time again.
And you know what, Chris? The thing about him is he's never, ever moaned about it publicly. I have no idea what he's said privately or what's gone through his head, I can imagine. But publicly, he's never moaned about it. I was at Hampden last autumn when he had that awful night, lampooned by Scottish fans, scores an own goal, comes out afterwards and stands there and talks about it. and it's not the first time he's done it after England duty. Answers the questions, talks about the difficulties he's faced, never, ever moaned about it. I just think he has shown extraordinary resolve in the last two years. You and I have joked about it many times before because you thought he shouldn't have gone to the World Cup last time, and I took the piss out of you because you had a good World Cup. But we've moved on from that now. He's come back. He's proved a manager who wanted to sell him wrong. And I tell you what, I know he doesn't wear that captain's armband anymore. Bruno Fernandes has got that. But a captain's armband is only a piece of cotton at the end of the day. And the spiritual leader of that football team, when he plays, when he's fit, is Harry Maguire, as far as I'm concerned.
So you'd give him the armband back then if you were...
No, I wouldn't, mate, because he doesn't need it. He doesn't need it to lead. He doesn't need it. And maybe it was playing, weighing him down a little bit. Maybe he was finding it too much when he was in poor form to be captain as well. Just let the guy play. Pick him every week while he's fit and let him play, because at the moment he's Manchester United's best defender.
You wouldn't give your greatest leader the armband.
He's leading anyway, mate. He's leading anyway. Okay. Quick little bit on Luton. I know I'm starting to sound as though I'm obsessed with fixtures today, but I'm going to say it.
Like a fixture secretary. If I could picture a fixture secretary, you would be there.
No, I'm far too disorganised, mate. No, seriously. If I was in charge of fixtures, I mean, Liverpool would have played seven times on the same weekend by now. Luton, poor, little bit of a blip last weekend, lost at home to Sheffield United. Nobody expected that. Now, their problem, I'm just full of problems, their problem is that they've got Liverpool, Arsenal, Tottenham, Man City all away between now and the end of the season. So games like this one, you know, they've terrified big teams at home this season, but they haven't beaten many of them. They've had a lot of glorious failures at home, losing by an odd goal, performing heroically. They're going to need to win some home games if they're going to stay up. I'm fear for them a little bit. Still, despite how well they've done.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of a result against, or in terms of their result at the weekend against Sheffield United, that, I think, was pretty disastrous. Just because of the whole mindset going into the game that we're going to beat Sheffield United. They are the bottom team. We've been on a good run. Confidence is there. I think that It's going to be really interesting, this game against Manchester United, because Luton have to recover, really, I think, just so the seeds of doubt, don't really start to escalate. So that will be interesting, and we're only going to tell, in the next few games whether Luton recover or not. I think. With their away form, I wouldn't be overly concerned. I know they're tough fixtures, but we saw them go up to Newcastle, and people can make what they like about Newcastle, but they took the game to Newcastle. They've developed the way they play this season. They're braver than other teams in and around them at the bottom. They are more organised. I hope from a Luton perspective that the defeat against Sheffield United was one which they learn from, and that shakes them up, and they, gives them that resolve and that fight where we can't let anything like this happen again.
Yeah, it's one of those that feels a little bit like it'll either be a blip, or it'll be a blip that becomes a problem. It'll only become a problem if they have another bad weekend this time. Now, finally, before we go, Lewis Smith, who's from Wigan, so must be a good lad. Lewis Smith will referee Fulham versus Aston Villa on Saturday. He's 30 years old. He's gone from the National League to the Premier League in 10 months. He didn't referee a championship game until last October. I am all for that. If you're good enough, you're old enough and all that. I know some people will raise an eyebrow. What's your take on
that? Who's going to raise an eyebrow?
No, some people will say, he's not experienced enough. He hasn't done the grounding. As soon as he makes a mistake, they'll say, he's too young. He's been fast-tracked too quickly. I will say here and now, whatever happens to him on Saturday, and I hope he has a great game, I applaud that from PGMOL, because I think it's a sign of the way that Howard Webb, who I have criticised at times, is prepared to be forward-thinking, brave, put his money where his mouth is, and look at a young referee and just think he's good enough, he's going, he's having his chance. I'm very, very comfortable with it.
Yep, and I'm not going to disagree with anything that you have said, but let's just wait and see over a period of time. It's his ability to do the job, and obviously Howard Webb sees something in him, or the PGMOL sees something in him, and have fast-tracked him, and I'm all for that, but let's just see. As we have to give managers time and players time, it's no different for referees. Good luck to him.
Absolutely. Good luck, Lewis. We will be rooting for you, mate. It's not an easy job, and I hope your debut in the Premier League goes well. Right, thank you for listening, everybody. Please remember to go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Leave some comments, leave a review. Please do subscribe. We've got a nice comment here from Fergal Favier on Spotify.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Fergal Sharkey for a minute.
Fergal Favier on Spotify, who said, been looking for one football podcast to listen to after the weekend games, and this is now the one I have settled on. But enough of all that.
I thought you were going to say, but I haven't found it yet.
Enough of all that, Fergal. What's your view on baby horses, mate?
Yeah.
Let's hear it. Come on. That is it. We are done. We will see you on Monday. Cheers.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.